at the end of the recent trails, about 3 hours. And it's not really, it was a little warm and buggy, but her horse rolled in the field with her on him. And after she remounted, he bucked. And thankfully, his bucks are not really athletic. Then she says she wanted to clarify it, that a horse doesn't buck in the traditional sense. He's built very uphill and usually at a slow pace, often walking. He'll launch himself into the air one time, never a series of movements. He never bucks her off, but she has to jump off and hand walk him home. She calls this move his hissy fit buck. It's not a feel good buck, but a I don't like it, what you're asking me to do buck. Keep your distance, let the other horses go ahead, stop to chat with a friend on the way home. Anything like that seems to be causing issues. I have ridden him at least 10 times since the rolling bucking incident, and he's fine. And she makes sure he keeps moving and makes sure that she stays sensitive to the horse that she's riding that with that day. The tricky part is that he regularly stops to pee, and I have to be careful not to let him roll. If you could cover this topic, I'd be great, and then she'll listen in. She said she did buy a few of the DVDs, but she's not started working with him on those yet. So
I'd hurry with that.
Yeah.
Because that is it. You know, that is really the answer, you know. And you know, the teleseminars are great, and I can address issues, but, you know, the real issue is that the horse doesn't respect what's being asked of him, doesn't respect you or what you're asking of him. And so what the DVDs are all about is developing the type of communication that a horse can recognize, respect, and respond to. If they don't recognize our communication, they can't respect it. And if they can't recognize it or respect it, how on earth are they going to respond to it? So, you know, I can give you a couple of techniques, because there's really two issues right there. The rolling with you on them is no bueno. That is the end of that, okay? And let me tell you how to resolve that. When a horse goes to roll, they put their head down, okay? When a horse starts to put their head down, the pressure needs to go towards the hindquarters. Okay, and that goes for, you can listen to old teleseminars where I talk about eating grass on the trail and things like that. You know, so to prevent a horse from rolling, be ready to put pressure on the hindquarters. When I ride a horse, I have a long string on my right side. I have a long string I can reach, you know, get to really quick on my left side also, because you don't know which hand is going to be, you know, handier in the moment. But it is really dangerous for a horse to think that they can stop and roll. And even if they do get down on the ground ahead of you, you know, kind of, because I have a horse, Deb, that, boy, he'll just drop and roll like you think he's, you know, friends with Smokey the Bear, drop and roll, you know, instructions there. And it's fast. He's there 1 second, and he's always been allowed to do that. So in his mind, he just thinks that's the, you know, when he feels scratchy or the inclination, he just vanishes and he's just down on the ground. So you need to be ready. You kind of know when he does it. It sounds like when he comes home and he's kind of itchy and, you know, flies and that kind of thing. So, you know, be ready with something in your hand to put pressure, you know, towards the hindquarters. Now, when you put pressure towards the hindquarters, the first thing that happens is the head's going to come up. The second thing that might happen is the horse might accelerate. Okay, so you want to be ready for that as well with one rein. And that's why I emphasize going to the DVDs, you know, riding from the ground, riding from above, cornerstone for communication, all of those, because those are the words you're going to use in that type of conversation. And you're going to have it established before you ever get into that situation. Okay, so, you know, I can tell you these things and go, okay, put pressure towards the hindquarters and disengage the hindquarters and use the one rein stop, and I can explain all that. But if you have the DVDs, just go through the DVDs, and then knowing that when the horse goes to lay down, his head's going to go down, so pressure towards the hindquarters causes the head to lift up, okay, it'll all make sense to you, and more importantly, to the horse, okay? So he'll start to understand that when my head goes down, my behind hurts. May, you know, no, and you probably won't have to do that, but, you know, I've seen horses probably 3-4 times at the most, and that horse goes, no, I don't really want to roll on the ground because every time I think about it, my butt hurts. So it's a response in a sequence to behavior, okay, to reshape the behavior. The part about the bucking, okay, and everybody listening to this question, you know, in hearing the question, you can see the pattern that has been inadvertently reinforced. The horse doesn't want to do something. He jumps a little bit, and here's my caution there. My caution is that the horse has jumped a little bit, and you say, well, he's not very athletic. Well, he hasn't needed to be very athletic because the next part in the sequence is that he's walked home, okay? So you haven't really seen, that's why I'm putting a little caution in here. When you start reshaping this behavior, you may see something more athletic and something that you can't ride, okay? So my suggestion is to go to those DVDs and really get the disengagement of the hindquarters really, really good on the ground and on the horse's back. You'll see it in the DVDs. And I would do it, you know, the average horse, you know, I do it a lot. But with this horse, the disengagement of the hindquarters is what's going to regain your leadership up on the horse's back when he gets in those situations. So what I like to do is to draw from human relations as well. And everybody has seen the frazzled mom at the end of the day and the kids are running around and she needs to stop and talk to you, but the kids don't want to, and the kids are pulling on her and they're doing this and they're doing that, and you see that she's torn. She wants to respect you and finish the conversation, but the child is demonstrating a behavior that she doesn't care for, and then she goes, oh, you know, the kids are this or that or whatever, I need to go with the kids. That's what I mean by inadvertently reinforcing the behavior. It's not to say that when a horse has a behavior that you feel uncomfortable with, not to get off that horse. People say, oh, don't get off the horse, you know, because then the horse wins. Well, I really challenge, you know, where the standings are for the end of year point in that program. You know, that's not a thing to do, to get off when you feel unsafe. But if you get off and rub them on the neck and have a nice leisurely walk home, then you're creating a pattern of behavior. But if I step off a horse because he bucked, and I say, hey, you need to move your feet, see, pretty soon that horse says, you know, I'm thinking in my mind, don't make me pull this car over. Because if I pull the car over, what's going to happen next isn't something that you really want to experience again. Not in a mean or aggressive kind of a way, just in a, you know, here's consequences for a behavior. That's how behavior is shaped. Consequences are good behavior. They're also unwanted behavior. So if the horse goes along and does what you ask and you stand there and visit with a friend and he wants to go home, but he says, you know what, when I start fussing around, then things start getting uncomfortable for me. You know what, I think I'd just like to stand here and relax while she visits a little bit. And then when she's ready to go, we'll go. You know, wouldn't that be nice? And it seems like such a simple request to ask of the horse. But if there isn't a base of communication between you and the horse, this is where what appears to be problems arise. And we want to fix to the problem, but the real answer is expand your skill of communication with that horse so that when you're in those situations, you have something to draw from. And what you'll probably find, that this is the most likely scenario, what you'll probably find is when you go through those DVDs and start going through the tasks and the exercises, you'll get out there on the ride and the horse won't show you those behaviors because the horse has a different, he's already formed a different opinion of you, okay? So those are a lot of different aspects to what seems like a simple question, you know, but the whole time in my mind I'm thinking I have to answer this in such a way because, you know, it doesn't sound like to me that you really are prepared or want to, desire to ride a bucking bronco. And if you get into a fight with a horse like this, it can absolutely turn into that. Okay, so I don't want you to invite the fight, but I want you to develop and expand that communication. When you go through those DVDs, and it doesn't have to be a bunch of time, you don't have to say, oh, I can't do it until I have 3 hours. Spend 20 minutes. 20 minutes. Go out there and things will start to change drastically. I see it. I'm doing a clinic in Colorado next week. You know, we see it within the first hour of the clinic, here's, you know, 10 to 15 horses, all with a different opinion of that person, because the very basic of it is about establishing, you know, your position in the herd hierarchy with that particular horse. So it's, I can't say that it's a piece of it. It's at the heart of it, you know, those things really are. But hopefully that gives you some ideas. And here's another piece to consider. When a horse bucking is a resistance to going forward. Okay? So if you're faced away from the house and the horse wants to go towards the house, that horse doesn't want to go. You're asking him to go. When the horse bucks, that is a resistance to going forward. Okay? So I just want you to have that base of understanding around bucking, because when you said, oh, he's not very athletic, in the same sentence, you said, I have a 9-year-old, you know, healthy, athletic horse, but he doesn't buck very athletically. And that's where I put that little caution in the beginning there to say, you know, you might find a different horse when you start developing your skills of communication and asking that horse to do something that he doesn't want to do. And it's really amazing to me. I wasn't, you know, I think about horses all the time, so I'm, you know, doing things here and there, and I'm, you know, thinking of things. And one of the things I emphasize in my clinics is that horses are just like children. They're great until you ask them to do something that they don't want to do. Okay? And that's where our limitations come in, and that's why I really applaud you for asking this question, because so many people have those kinds of questions. But it really goes back to get your foundation right, and then start drawing from that foundation, and then you know what to do when those situations arise. You have something to draw from. So rather than just a quick fix kind of thing, what I do is go back and just take a fresh start with this horse. Just change that horse's opinion of you by expanding your ability of communication with them. It'll go really fast. It's not like something that's going to take 30 days or 60 days or 90 days. It'll happen really, really quickly. And even if you don't have time to interact with the horse, you guys are getting cold back there. Well, like I already said, you know, and I'm sorry, I apologize. You might be here in Phoenix, you know, where I'm at. But, you know, just watch those videos at night. You don't have to even have horse time planned. Just watch the videos and let that kind of soak in and get the ideas and the concepts. And you'll really be amazed how quickly these kind of behaviors can turn around. Because it sounds like he's a nice guy. You do a lot of riding with him. It's just he's developed patterns of behavior that you've inadvertently reinforced because you just didn't realize what it was that you were doing at the time or what else to do. So hopefully that gives you some ideas to think about, but really get to those DVDs. I can't encourage you more on that. And like I said in the very beginning, hurry, because these are the kind of patterns of behavior that can go from bad to worse. Okay, so let me know how that goes. I'd really like to hear back from you after you get through these DVDs with your horse and start doing those tasks. And let me know what you think. I know what it is that I see with hundreds and hundreds of horses with their owners, but I want to know what you experienced from this.
Thank you. Okay, this is from Sandy, and it says, I have purchased your 6th DVD set, and I'm peeling away at it. At this point, do not have a mentor in my area that I trust or respect. In going to the Western State Expo and talking with a clinician there, he suggested that in choosing a distance-based learning program that I stick to just one and learn everything I can. Good advice, I thought. All the clinicians there were selling some kind of complete program or certificate course. My question is, seeing I bought your set first and resonate with your style, could you recommend what you would consider to be your complete learning course? Is the 6th DVD set just that, or have you thought of, or are you considering a certification course on your program? Thanks, Sandy.
It's a really good question, and, you know, I've heard people make that suggestion before, and I don't disagree with it, you know, to a point. But when it gets to a point where somebody says, forsake all others, that's where I get uncomfortable with it. The thing about my program, and I tell people at the beginning of my clinic, what I'm about to share with you is not going to conflict with what you already know about horses or what you will ever learn about horses. Because what I like to teach people is how horses interact with each other. So if somebody disagrees with it, it's kind of hard to disagree. You would know the difference. Okay, because how horses interact with each other is through their physiology, posturing, feel contact, release of pressure, all of those things. So I don't know that I wholeheartedly recommend that, stick with one program, although I do encourage people to become skilled enough to be able to discern that the information that they're being exposed to at that moment, you know, makes sense or not. Okay? So, I do realize that people can go this way and that way on. And, you know, to me, it's just about learning. And if I can go to somebody, and it's hard sometimes. I'll go to somebody and they'll be teaching from a perspective that I'm not familiar with or maybe, you know, not agree with or maybe even disagree with. But what I've conditioned myself to do because my desire is so high is to look for the piece that makes sense and would broaden, you know, my current knowledge. And everybody's heard the term. You can learn something from everybody, even if it's watching them and going, ooh, I wouldn't do that. You know, learning what not to do. Everybody's heard that phrase. So I can see the point, and I've heard people say that before, pick one person's program and follow it to a level of certification. But you know what? I don't know that at this stage that I completely agree with that. There are such wonderful horsemen out there. There are such wonderful experiences. If you go on my Facebook, I've been thrilled. Believe me, I had the biggest resistance to Facebook. But once I got on it, I feel like I get to meet people and I get to see their activities and their horse interests and their horse clubs. And what I've done gather different horse activities and horse clubs and magazines, things that I had not even heard of. And I have quite a bit of exposure, you know, into the horse industry. So, you know, I put that on there, a equal representation of all kinds of breeds, activities, recreational. If there's a product or nutrition or something that I recognize and agree with, I think it's important that we have as much exposure into the horse industry and people's interests and activities as we can. Because to me, the horse industry with this day of information age and sharing knowledge and access to the internet, there's so much to be able to draw from. And why would I tell somebody, oh, follow me? I've had people say, well, I'm going to follow you. And I go, well, gosh, I hope not. You know, yes, learn from me. Absolutely. I have a perspective that's unique and I feel valuable or I wouldn't do it. And it's very effective. I've seen people, you know, make really amazing changes with their horse and their confidence with horses because I address, you know, particular things that resonate with people, in particular, you know, women, hence horsemanship for women. But as far as, you know, follow me only and that kind of thing, I don't know that I agree with that. You know, there's no way that I can know what, you know, other people know or that they know what I know. That's why I think it's important to be able to draw from them. So I think if I were to put that in a nutshell, I would say develop the ability to be able to discern what that information means to you and especially to your horse. Does it make sense to the horse? You know, I've taken courses from people, you know, I think I've shared this in other teleseminars that, you know, I commit to taking, you know, courses myself for my further development because, you know, nobody knows everything about horses. And you need anybody who says they know everything about horses, you need to run the other way. But, you know, it's important that we keep our learning open to a variety of things. And somebody can offer you, I'll just close it with this perspective. Maybe you can see where I'm coming from. Somebody can offer you something that takes you out of your box. And you go, wow, this is out of the box thinking. Oh, this is so progressive. Oh, this is so amazing. Oh, you know, and you get really excited about it. And you can get into that and get enthralled with it and get involved with it. And you get these great results and things are changing, that kind of thing. But you can wake up one day and find yourself in another box. You see? So to me, it's important to think outside the box. And I like to describe my way of teaching as promoting independent thought. And a lot of times people want more structure to what I'm teaching them. They go, okay, well, I've come to this clinic and it's really great. You know, where are the notes? Where's the instructions? I do one, I do two, I do three. You know, I want to know, you know, how to do this. And I said, well, you can take the videos or you can write notes, you know, at the end of the day. You know, just like when I go to seminars, I might, you know, make some notes and things like that. But here's my question. You know, I'm teaching people a way of being with horses. And so, you know, I like to ask people the question, are there instructions to raising a child? You know, did you, you know, even if you took a parenting class, which I find many people don't, that's one of my informal surveys at some of the larger audiences. You know, I ask people who's, you know, who's a parent, who's not a parent, you know, who's taken parenting classes relative to how many parents there are. Very few people take parenting classes. And then I ask the big question, raise your hand if you wish your parents had taken parenting classes. Well, everybody raises their hand. Okay. So this is what we're doing with horses, but even if you take a parenting class, you don't go home with a book and instructions, step one, step two, step three. That's why I teach more from a leadership and an interactive type of a style, because then you can take information from other people and other programs and things, and you can apply it in a way that makes sense to the horse. Again, going back to the first question, what's imperative is that a horse can recognize it, respect, and respond to it. That's really our ultimate goal with horses or with people or with kids or dogs or, you know, not cats. Cats are outside of that. I'm looking at my cat right now. She's like, oh, no, that doesn't work on cats. Okay? So if that makes sense to you, I know it's kind of a long answer to that, but that's from personal experience. I am developing advanced videos because right now the six DVDs are some foundation, probably the foundation series. So I have, I'm actually looking at a project list here, and we have a huge list of titles that they're partially produced. So, you know, we had the Fix It Today series come out here recently. We have some more titles coming out on that because from the teleseminars, it's obvious that there's issues that, you know, people need to be addressed. We're getting those into the tax stores, and we have, you know, just a whole lot of plans for a whole lot more information and knowledge to be shared with people. So I'm definitely doing that. Do I have a certification program under my title, my umbrella? I don't know that I see that in the future, but everything's subject to change. I may, you know, be at a point one day. I do have a young person who's going to Colorado State University who I do consider my apprentice. She's been to, probably going on. She's coming to the clinic in Colorado. She's making the drive over from Denver side of the mountains to come to that. It'll probably be her 14th or 15th clinic that she's attended. So, and she learns something different every time, and I can't stop her. She keeps coming back. She's there every chance that she gets, and she's probably somebody that I would endorse in the future. But how many, you know, people are willing to do what she's doing to reach her goal in the future, you know, with horsemanship? So it's just keep studying. It's keep trying. There's the clinic in Colorado. There's a woman flying in from Alabama. That's coming to the clinic. There's people making a half-day drive up from Arizona, you know, coming to that. So, you know, it's really, you know, it's there for you. It may not be as big or as obvious as other people, you know, put the structure to their program, but I guarantee you it doesn't cost as much either. So not that it's not worth it. Not that it's not worth it. I went through a certification program myself, and I value it very much.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Sandy, for asking that question. And I think it is just to encourage Karen to continue to put those DVDs out because we really like having those come out. So if you haven't gone online and taken a look at the new series out, she does have one on despooking and needle shy, kicking, pulling back, pace warming, and clipping. Did I get them?
Yeah.
I think I got them all. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, take a look online, and those are really helpful, and it really is hands-on and fixing things in that day. I've had a chance to take a look at those, and they're really good. So if you've not had an opportunity, go online and take a look at those. So Okay, we'll go ahead and move on here because I'm anxious to get to the very last question. So we'll move on here.
Is it yours?
It is. It is. So but we'll get these other two first. Okay, this one is preparing the farrier. And it says, what tips do you have to help a horse be great about getting his feet trimmed?
Let's see. Where do I start with that one? You know, horses picking up their feet, you can tell a lot about a horse by how they pick their feet, how they hold their feet. And, you know, I've had people say, oh, would you come over and look at this horse? This horse is for sale. What do you think? And, you know, and I basically go in and I kind of have a, you know, a 100-point check, and one of them is just picking up the horse's feet. And a lot of people don't think about that, you know, when they buy the horse. But if you have a horse that has trouble, you know, picking up their feet, that's a, you know, I don't want to say it's a tough one to fix, but it can spiral into something that becomes, you know, more and more and more serious. I'll give you the extreme example. I went to shoot a video for a show that was on, that is on RFD-TV, horsecity.com, and one of the topics they wanted me to cover was having a horse, you know, pick up its feet. And they brought this horse out with very little information, which is fine with me. Sometimes I prefer it. But I started talking to the camera, and it was a fairly young horse, probably a yearling. And I went along with this horse, and I'm doing, you know, my thing, and I'm releasing, you know, when the horse tries, and I'm doing my thing, and everything's good. And you could see the horse just shut down. And the horse was kind of trying, but he couldn't. He just couldn't. And I got to a point with it, and I just said, okay, cut, stop tape. I said, can you give me a little bit of information here? And they said, well, this horse has been roped and, you know, tied down on the ground and held down. And, you know, I mean, big monster, you know, WWE wrestling matches, it sounded like. And, you know, it just broke my heart to see this little horse. He was a sharp little horse, but he just didn't have a chance to learn, you know, from the beginning. So this horse was having to come out of a big hole, okay, which is kind of a mental hole. That horse had never had a positive experience about picking up his feet. And, you know, it was unfortunate, but I said, you know, I'm happy to help you with this horse, but I don't think it's the, you know, 7-minute time slot that you have scheduled for this little, you know, this short little helpful hints from picking up your horse's feet, you see. So I said, this is more of a, you know, over the course of, you know, a couple of days, that horse would be a good horse to have in a clinic, you know, to have that horse kind of change his mind about what's being asked of him, that he could feel confident, you know, in feeling that element of success. You know, I think horses, when something is clearly presented to them and they make the right choices and they get the release and the reinforcement, you know, horses, that builds on it. But this horse had not had those experiences. So that's probably the most extreme, you know, scenario outside of, you know, an untouched Mustang. I've handled the feet of the untouched Mustang, not a BLM Mustang, but untouched. And those horses, we picked up their feet, we, you know, saddled them, we did all kinds of things. And those horses were easier than this horse because those horses weren't in a hole yet. They had never had a good experience or a bad experience with picking up their feet. And because it was presented to them in such a way that they could understand, it went really fast. So in kind of recognizing that, I don't know any more about, you know, what kind of trouble you're having, you know, with a horse. But basically what I do is I, you know, do the ground skills first with the horse. Again, that's, you know, riding from the ground or cornerstone for communication, so that the horse understands he's not going to run over me or, you know, come into my personal space uninvited, because that's a maneuver, a pattern of behavior that horses sometimes have. I like to take a horse out on a halter and a lead, you know, 12-foot lead line, but not tied, because then I can allow that horse to drift. If the horse has trouble, you know, with back feet, I can take the nose towards me, which kicks the hindquarters away from me and keeps me safe. You know, I can have those kind of maneuvers with them. but I'd start even back further where I would take the extension, an extension of my arm, which is the teaching stick that I use when I interact with horses, and I touch them all over. I make sure I can touch them up under the belly, between the back legs, touch them all over. It's amazing that we don't do that. We find a spot where the horse gets a little flinchy, like around the flank or under the leg or something, and then we avoid that. But if you use an extension of your arm and you reach in and you just touch it, you know, and keep rubbing it, that horse, they can and should get used to you touching them everywhere. So you may even want to, go clear back to that, to where you're just touching that horse down a back leg. The kicking, the Fix It Today series, that horse there, I'll tell you what, that horse kicks for, 30 minutes straight, just touching him with a stick down the back leg. He just had, not that great of an opinion of being touched around that body part. But you see what I do to help him understand that I'm not there to hurt him. I'm there to build trust with him through the communication. So that, again, that's another extreme situation, but it gives you the idea. So I'd touch the horse all over, make sure they're okay with that. Then I'd, run my hand down, start with the front foot, and I would just take my hand and come down, touching them down the neck, down the shoulder, and I come around kind of behind the elbow, and I take the chestnut, and I just do a light squeeze on the chestnut, holding it steady. I don't go on, off, on, off, on, off. It's not pulsing or anything. It's just steady, and it goes light, medium, firm, and it's really amazing. That horse, they get uncomfortable. It's not painful. They just go, hey, what is that? And they'll offload their weight and release at that moment. I don't wait for them to pick their foot up, but I might just wait for them to shift their weight. Then I rub them and start again. Come down the neck to the shoulder. It doesn't have to take 10 minutes to get from the neck to the shoulder or anything. Just so the horse knows where your touch is. Then touch that chestnut again. Start, just hesitate there. Then start light, medium, firm. And the horse will get the idea that that pressure goes away when he not only off, takes the weight off that leg, but now he starts to pick up that leg. And every time you pick up that leg, if you go through the sequence with consistency, I can walk up to a horse, run the hand down, and just touch that chestnut, and they just pick their foot up to me. I'm not putting my head way down towards the ground, putting it in a dangerous place. I'm not squeezing the tendon, which is uncomfortable. If you've ever had a brother or an annoying cousin or hubby, grab that Achilles tendon, it's painful. So it does work because that's what everybody's taught to do. So I've taught my horses to lift up from that pressure as well, because if somebody else is handling my horses, they'll sit there and squeeze the tendon, and the horse is like, what do you want? All they need to do is touch the chestnut, and the horse picks the foot up. But they don't know that. It's not painful to the tendon and keeps your head out of the way. So it doesn't take very long for the horse to learn to pick that up. Now, when you're holding the foot, if you hold it by the toe, then you have more leverage. So sometimes horses get in a habit of pulling their foot away. But if you hold the tip of that toe and lift straight up, the horse has no leverage. Okay, so those muscles, those extensor muscles, are really weak. So if you come straight up, then, and you don't need to hold the foot for, 15 minutes, just hold it for a little bit till the horse relaxes. If he tries to pull it away, lift the toe up, and then just keep kind of rubbing it, touching it, that kind of thing, and just as it relaxes, until the horse allows you to place their foot down. Okay, don't drop the foot when you're done. If farriers and trimmers would do one thing, it's just not just let that foot drop and hit that toe on the ground. It doesn't take much just to be polite and place that, on the ground for that horse. Because the horse can get nervous and anticipating going, when's the shoe going to drop there? So it's the same thing on the back leg. Have your lead line around. Make sure you've touched the horse all over the hindquarters. You feel comfortable that the horse is comfortable with you back there. And then just rub them with your hands. Just take your hand, rub them down, the leg on both sides. Rub all the way down, all the way up. You want that horse to think when you're coming back towards the hindquarters that it's not going to be a bad thing. So if they drift, if they keep turning, just walk with them and just keep rubbing the hip if you can. Not, if the horse gets defensive or gets in danger, bring the nose towards you. Have that rope short enough that you can tip that nose toward you, you know, pretty quick if you need to. Don't have that soggy rope. That's another thing I cover on the videos is the affliction of the soggy rope syndrome. That's a real dangerous habit to get into. So have that rope at the lead line at a distance that you can turn that horse's nose to you if that horse gets defensive and goes to kick or gets scared in any way. But as soon as you can, get back, even if you end up by the shoulder, just walk back and drift, you know, get by the hip and just give them a rub. And maybe, you know, if they're having trouble up to that point, when you give them a rub and they just stand there, quit for a second. You know, we get so much like border collies. We get in there like, you know, we're going to wipe a kid's dirty nose and we come at them and, you know, we need to be a little more indirect, you know, about it so that that horse doesn't feel that pressure. What they perceive us as sometimes, you know, is as a prey animal. We get very direct line and we're thinking and we're looking at that back left foot and we're going to get a hold of it and gall darn it, you give me that foot. That makes them act more like a prey animal and say, I don't know what's wrong with you, but you look like you want to chew my leg off right now. And it's hard not to get frustrated. You know, handling the feet, when a horse isn't confident with it, it can knock you off balance, it's tiring. You know, you think it's not that such a big deal for the horse, why is he giving me trouble, you know, that kind of a thing. But if you think about it from a prey animal point of view, you know, movement and flight is number one survival mechanism of the horse. And so when you're picking up a foot and they're holding a foot up for you, you know, especially for, you know, a period of time, like for trimming or shoeing or anything like that, you're taking their survival mechanism away. And if they don't feel confident in that, you know, that's like saying, well, oh, it's okay, we're not going to eat you, but, you know, you don't feel comfortable, but we're just going to, you know, take your survival mechanism away. That's a big thing to ask of a horse. So if you have a horse that's kind of in a hole, a mental hole, you know, like I described in that very first horse, just plan on taking some time. And it doesn't have to be, okay, we're going to do it for 3 hours. It's nothing like that. Just go out and get it a little better each day. Get it a little better each day. And instead of just doing it once before you ride and once after you ride, you know, just when you get off your horse, just go, hey, I wonder if I can just come over here and just pick up a back left foot. You know, you've got your reins in your arm and that kind of thing. Just pick up their feet at unexpected times so that it just becomes nothing more than, you know, petting them on the neck. Just pick up that foot, give it a rub it really nice, and they'll get to where they like having their feet picked up, okay? So, you know, it's important. There's a whole sequence to that, and that's actually another Fix It Today DVD that you know, we have just about ready for production. But because there's more to that, I could go on another, you know, 20 minutes about that. But that gives you an idea. You know, first think about it from where the horse is coming from. You know, the having to come out of a hole, if he had, you know, not so, you know, happy experiences with it. It might take longer. It might take shorter. You know, you don't know. But it's about you developing that feel and release before that horse starts feeling defensive. Just let it go. And if that horse gets ahead of you and pulls away or rips his, you know, hoof out of your hand and whirls around and faces you, just go, oh, no big deal, my bad, we're okay, just go back, rub the hips, and start again. That's probably one of the biggest messages I give to people. I've shared it on Facebook and other places, is that you get do-overs with horses. So even if they have a pattern of behavior that, you know, they get ahead of us or they imbalance us, I mean, you can get mad, but it doesn't help anything. You just can look at it from this poor prey animal's point of view and go, listen, dude, I'm not here to hurt you. Let's just start again and start again and start again, you know, until pretty soon that horse says, gosh, it's more work to be afraid than just to relax. But be sure to give that foot back before that horse, you know, feels defensive. That's what's going to build that horse confidence in it. So, but again, there's more to that. I'll have the video out, you know, as soon as it, you know, works out in the schedule here. But hopefully that'll give you a good start on it.
Okay. Well, thank you, Barbara, for submitting that question. And again, look for that DVD as it comes out. So, okay. This one question is from Leslie. And
Sorry, Melinda, I need to interrupt. Sorry. Uh-huh. On the front legs, I use the chestnut for that pressure point to teach the horse to pick its foot up to me. On the back leg, it's the cap of the hawk. So I run my hand down the back leg, and then I kind of cup my hand over the hock, and I take my fingertips into the hock. I don't do a big bear claw or anything, just gradually taking that pressure, just holding it steady, consistently increasing it until that horse shifts the weight off of that foot or even begins to lift it up. Okay?
So I don't want people to try. You can do it with a chestnut on the back, but it's easier just to have your hand on the hock to do that.
Okay, thanks for that bit there. So that's what I like, Karen, is you give so much detail and such a clear picture that it really helps. So, okay,
it's easier on video, you guys.
It is on the video. It is. So, okay, well, this one's from Leslie, and it says she has a 10-year-old Kentucky Mounted Bred saddlebred horse that she has owned for a little over 18 months. And this horse was pretty laid back and sweet disposition. He's a follower on the trail. He's most happy when he has his nose in the tail of a horse from his herd. He will maneuver himself into that position whenever possible. He is very uncomfortable leading, so I don't ask him if we don't have to. Yet he gets panicky when he feels he's being left behind and will run to catch up. My problem with him is that he will pin his ears and kick back when he is passed by another horse, or even when he is asked to pass another horse from behind, he will try to kick back. He will sometimes attempt to nip the horse next to him. Is there anything I can do to discourage this behavior, or is he permanently stuck with the red ribbon on his tail? Thanks, Leslie.
Yes, and here's the good news. That is on a DVD. It's not in the Fix It Today series. It's in the television series, and it's Trail Riding Etiquette. And you'll see it in there. It's so easily explained in there about kicking, about, you know, the position of the horse, you know, those kinds of things. But I will answer, you know, pieces of this briefly, but please don't say, oh, this is as good as the DVD, because there's no way, you know, the picture is worth a thousand words, although I do reach probably a thousand words in these answers sometimes. Here, at the heart of it, the horse lacks confidence. And the reason the horse lacks confidence is because the horse doesn't view you in the leadership position. The horse that's with the lead horse, it can be, you know, very low in the hierarchy in the horse herd, but when they get with the lead horse, there is leadership and confidence through association. So I'm going to go back to, again, the foundation with this horse. If you went back to the ground skills and the riding from the ground and the riding from above, that horse would have so much connection with you. Wherever you directed it, he'd be like, I'm on it. I'm on the job. I trust you. Okay? So a horse that doesn't trust the rider is kind of a horse that, you know, when the conditions are all okay, there's another horse along, and there's a horse to follow, and we don't have to go ahead, and nobody's passing us. You know, those kind of conditions are all indications that that horse really lacks confidence, and what that horse is doing is really just giving you a ride, you know. But there's so much more that you can access from that horse, because horses, they're natural followers, but they're looking for the natural leader. And the type of horse that you're describing there is the horse that, if you went back to the foundation and got some of that leadership established with the horse, that horse would look at you like you are gold. I mean, the horse would go, oh, thank goodness, I know, you know, I can have a conversation with you. I know what's being asked of me, and I know how to find it. So, you know, that's the nice thing about those kinds of horses. When you start interacting from a position of leadership, a lot of times they're happy to turn that over. You know, there's other horses that are pretty confident in their own leadership, and they kind of look at you like, yeah, I'm not sure how good you really are at leadership. And those are the ones that you have to really, you know, convince that you're in a leadership position. So that's good news. It sounds like you have a really sweet horse, and you know, if you go back to that foundation, those kinds of things, the defensive behavior, people think kicking is aggressive, but kicking is really a defensive behavior. I have seen it be aggressive, you know, but majority of the time, probably 90% of the time, it's defensive. So
when you get those things established, and the reason I'm directing you back to that foundation is because there are so many things in your communication that will come into play, okay? But one of the, and the main thing here is that disengaging the hindquarters, taking the hindquarters away. So, you know, everybody knows the, you know, what the ribbon and the tail means. And what that really means is I let my horse kick other horses, okay? Because if you knew what else to do, that wouldn't be there. That behavior could be shaped really relatively quickly if you knew what to do. But that answer, that piece, is creating that foundation of communication understanding with the horse. So when a horse comes up behind or is passing or something like that, what's important is when you feel the horse in the ears, and you'll see the technique on the DVD, is take that one rein and push the hip away from the target. It's really hard for a horse to kick another horse when they're facing it. Now, they may turn around and try to bite it or something like that. But a lot of the things I like to do in clinics and things like that, it's because I can orchestrate it. I'm not saying for you to do this, but because you need the right kind of people and horses around you to be able to do this. But a lot of times horses get in trouble when they pin their ears at other horses. So think about this. A horse pins its ears at another horse, and then it gets punished. So it doesn't take very long for the horse to go, oh, no, another horse is coming along, and they pin their ears, like, get away from me because I always get punished when another horse comes around. And so I've taken horses that have extreme behavior that looks to be aggressive, and I ride up next to them with a long extension, again, using my stick, and I'll ride up next to them and pet that person's horse, their horseback also, and I'll pet that horse with that stick. And every time I come up, to pet their horse. And then when that horse starts getting the idea that the other horses aren't, nothing bad's going to happen when another horse is around, then I have other people, when they feel confident, come up and use the extension and be rubbing their horse as well. And I'll tell you what, it doesn't take very long before that horse starts going, you know what, other horses are not bad. And it's the most bizarre thing. People just, I had one gal in a clinic, and I mean the other participants, it was like Survivor. She got voted off the island. They were like, she needs to ride that horse outside of this arena. This is dangerous. And I said, we're going to make this a little project, because that horse didn't just, you know, pin its ears and switch its tail. That horse would turn and, I mean, the teeth, you just saw teeth coming at you. And the poor gal, she was just in tears. You can imagine, she was so embarrassed. But, you know, I commended her. I said, this is a difficult behavior, and you've brought your horse to the right place to address these kinds of situations. And I said, I'm just going to ride right next to you, and I'm just going to keep petting your horse, and I'm going to keep petting your horse, and I'm going to keep, you know. And she said, oh, he's going to bite. We're going to, he's going to bite. I said, no, this horse is too slow to bite the fighting Spanish Andalusian, you know. And we just had some fun with it. And it was really amazing, because that horse would show his teeth and come at Berg, and Berg would just pull his head away like, yeah, whatever, you know, and come back in, and we just kept petting and petting and petting. And that horse, by, you know, that little half a day kind of project thing, that behavior became a thing of the past. So I'm giving you a scenario. If you're in the right environment with the right kind of people, you can set up a scenario like that, like when you're not on the trail. Because sometimes the trail is too narrow to do these kind of projects, and your terrain might be uneven enough that you wouldn't, you know, want to do those kinds of things. So you can set it up in an arena or just down the lane, you know, on the shoulder of a dirt road or something like that. Just have people come along and, you know, take the hindquarters away when you need to, or move the front end, see if somebody can get close enough with an extension of their arm just to pet your horse. You know, just start doing some things to help developing that horse's confidence. But don't dismiss going back to the foundation, back to the riding from the ground, to have that horse view you in the leadership position. So Bergante used to come in when I'd be, you know, helping a horse horseback and using him. He'd come in and, you know, in the early days, he would want to take a chunk out of him. And I'd say, hey, dude, I'll let you know when to bite him. And he'd go, okay.
let me know when, because I'm ready. Well, I appreciate that. And I might need you to do that for me someday, but not right now. And, you know, because I've had him in so many of those situations, he really defers that decision, that behavior to me. Okay, but there have been times when I've been trying to help a horse, you know, turn loose of the hindquarters, and I've, you know, got him horseback, and, you know, I'm helping that horse, and he'll come in, and he'll see me focusing on that horse's hips, and he'll come in and pin his ears, and he'll do, as an extension of my body, he'll do kind of what I can, you know, from where I'm at. So it's not a bad thing. It's just horse behavior, but how you reshape the behavior to help that horse have confidence, not only in you, but in the situations and environments that you put yourself in around other horses. So hopefully that'll give you some ideas and some things to kind of fiddle with and see if you can't help that horse, you know, rebuild her confidence in both you and those situations.
Karen, I have seen that work because you had a horse here in Indiana that was doing that, that we end up doing something with that, and that did work. It, so I did get to see that hands-on. So
Yeah.
So there is hope.
Yeah, it really is. And I'll tell you what, the one thing to really know, one of my teachers really emphasized this, punishment does not work on prey animals. It really doesn't. You know, pressure and the release of pressure, horses understand. So if a horse, you know, if a horse is coming up from behind and your horse gets a little bit tight and you take the hindquarters away, drift it off, and then go on your way. You know, just say, hey, I'll let you know when to kick that horse. Who knows? You know, you might have a bad guy come after you, and you might want your horse to throw a good one, you know, and get in somebody's pestering you. Wouldn't that be quite the police horse if you could cue a horse on cue to kick out? I mean, isn't that what the Royal Whip of Honor school is? Isn't that what a caprial is to attack and have defense, you know, from behind? So it's not bad horse behavior. It's just not, you know, it's not desirable. And so it's expand, you know, your communication.
Okay. All right. Well, now I'm excited because I get to talk a little bit about something that I don't think there's a lot of information out there on that I'm seeing, Karen. And, you know, we all talk about desensitizing the horse, but I want to talk a little bit about sensitizing tonight because I had got a two-year-old that I've started riding, and he's a cutting horse prospect. And so I'm wanting, you know, to desensitize him, but I want to keep him sensitive, too. And I've got Mike back here that's, you know, saying, now be careful because you don't want to take and desensitize him too much because, you know, you want him a performance horse, you want him reactive, and that way. So I want you to kind of talk about, you know, getting a good balance there. You know, I obviously don't want him jumping out from under me, but I want to keep him sensitive too. So I guess I kind of want to hear a little bit about your thoughts on that.
I am not going to get between you and your husband, Mike.
Oh, you chicken.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, after, 15 years of teaching, I've learned one thing, it's not to get in the middle of that. No, I'll tell you what it is. In performance, that's a really common idea, you know, that you want that horse on the edge. You want him, like, you know, so sensitive, you know, the littlest thing. Well, that's true. That's absolutely true. But that's like saying, you know, if you, and how many performance horses get mentally fried, washed out, quit? You know, racehorses, thoroughbred racehorses will quit running. Quit?
Mm-hmm.
See, because everybody, oh, here he is, you know, his eyes are rolling in his head, and he's excited to be at the, you know, race. Well, that horse is sitting there going, man, I don't know what it is, but when I get out there, there's all these other horses, and they don't understand it. You know, performance is a beautiful thing when it's not done, if it's not done at the expense of the horse, physically, mentally, and emotionally. Okay? The top performance horses, and you said he's a cutting prospect?
Yes. Yeah.
Cutting? Okay. You go online and you look up Leon Harrell, H-A-R-R-E-L. You look up Leon Harrell. He's got horses that he could go out, move cattle, have them lay down on their belly, roll them upside. I mean, yeah, they could sit on bean bags. They can do all the gentle things, and then they will go out there and they will cut a cow that will make Mike go hubba hubba. Okay.
So you can't. I mean, Mike's not even sitting down and doing some stuff, and Mike's like, "You got to be careful here. You're gonna." And I'm like, "I don't think you can. Can you take that instinct out of them if they've got it?"
No, absolutely not. That's like, you know. Well, let me ask you a question. In human sport, what is the number one thing probably in the past 20 years that has greatly accelerated the performance in human sports?
That is greatly. I mean, one specific sport.
Yeah, one. Well, no, any sport, human sport.
Well, I mean, basketball's here in Indiana, obviously, but then.
Right. And what's it called when NBA basketball players go and take a ballet class? It's called cross training.
Yeah.
It's called cross training. And a lot of times people in the horse industry, we get so focused on our particular activity that we don't always translate the things that we've seen that have made huge differences in the human arenas of performance, like cross training. And we don't translate that necessarily to horses. And so we get in there and we say, well, all this horse can do is do this one thing. You know, it's all you can do. This is a cutting horse. Well, you see it in team ropers. This is a head horse, or this is a healing horse, and nary the two shall meet. Well, I've met plenty of folks that could use that horse, as a header, as a healer, as a turnback horse, a pickup horse, and then go put a fling strap on them and buck them out in a little rodeo school. See? What horses are capable of doing, and you've heard me say this, Melinda, I've said this multiple times, and I've never met anybody that disagrees with this. As a whole, in the horse industry, we have grossly underestimated the level of intelligence with horses.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So if I go and I take a piano class, does that, mess me up for my computer skills?
No.
You see? It's adding on to it. If anything, it refreshes me because I'm learning something completely different, completely removed from something else. Because we, human beings, we're good at taking something fun and making it work and making it a job. So how many children who have amazing talent at music or dance or athletics, and we drill it into them, I'll tell you a book to read, have Mike read, Andre Agassi's book about Andre Agassi, the famous tennis player. Do you have tennis there in Indiana?
Not so much basketball, but yeah.
But you've heard of Andre Agassi.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. He hated playing tennis, hated it. I don't mean just like, whatever. And it's a fascinating book. I was, when I started reading, I was disappointed. Like, what do you mean? How can you be, number one, win grand slams, all this stuff, and hate the sport that you, live and breathe? But it was how it was presented to him. Now, is he a talent? Is he this? Absolutely. But it was presented to him, in such a way. Now, he's married to Steffi Graf, who loves tennis and loves everything about it, you see, because it was presented to her in a different way. So one of the things that people are finding in the performance industry is they're accessing the psychology of horses to get even more brilliant performance. Okay, I'll use Spanish riding school. And I shouldn't use Spanish riding school, but there's a troop in Florida, and I had the opportunity to talk a little bit with the training there. And what they do is they take one horse and they train that horse to do the lavade, okay? And then horse number two, that horse is trained to do the caprile, nothing else. Okay, horse number three does, something else, okay? Does some other maneuver, okay? So, and they say, okay, this horse is the horse. That's the one that does that one maneuver. Well, the origination of that form of dressage, which is haut de col, which is different than Germanic military dressage, that was in warfare. So
So you didn't take your horse out and go, oh, I think I'm going to need the horse. Yeah, in this battle today, I'm going to need the horse that does the Capriole better. I think I'm going to, you know, you didn't do that.
Right.
You took a horse out, and that horse could lift up, come out, kick back, land, come around, spin around, and do everything. But what we've done is we've kind of compartmentalized our expectations and our ideas around performance. But it is changing. It's absolutely changing. And just because you desensitize a horse does not mean that they lose the sensitivity. Now, they can. And this is where Dr. Miller, who developed full imprinting, is very emphatic about this. He said the only time people have something bad to say about full imprinting is because it makes this foal, this over-gentle barnyard pet that thinks it's a dog and can come in the house and do all these kind of things, which, again, is great until you ask that animal to do something that it doesn't want to do. So, yes, can a horse be over-desensitized and over-gentle and that kind of thing? Absolutely. But if you want to find a balance in specific high-level performance, I don't know anybody better than Leon Harrell. Yeah, I mean, he is the creme de la creme. And so if he goes online and he looks at some of that video, I have seen it with my own true blue eyes. These horses that are cutting a cow, their belly is about 4 inches off the ground, and that horse is a 2-year-old, and that horse has no bridle and no saddle on it. And that horse is cutting a cow at international level performance, Olympic level performance. So, but you could have that horse lay down and crack a stock whip off it and, you know, roll around like a dog too. Mm-hmm. You see?
So
who's doing that? See, that's the difference. Is it possible? Yes. But what kind of skill level would you need to have to be able to do that?
Okay. So when I'm desensitizing, I mean, I'm real good at that. But then to bring it back in and sensitize, you just build your intent up, or you increase your intent, you move it faster, you ask more. I mean, am I in the right thinking there?
Well, let me give you a nice little saying that one of my teachers shared with me. Slow and right beats fast and wrong. But fast and right beats slow and right. Okay? So when we were with slow and right beats fast and wrong. So when you're in the teaching stage, remember we talked about teaching, reinforcing, and refining. Okay, you're in the teaching stage. And then you're reinforcing it. And then you're refining it. So like with Latigo, your horse Latigo, Melinda, how long, like, could you be in a race to run in there, and in how many seconds could you have him sit in the beanbag?
Oh, quickly. Yeah.
What would you say? What would you say from start to finish? If the beanbag was 15 feet away from him, how long, and he's facing it?
And he's facing in, I could turn around 15 seconds, he'd be down.
Okay, in 15 seconds, he'd be sitting there, okay?
Yeah.
Now, when you went in there and said, hurry and do this, do you think he might get a little bit confused or a little bit like, hey, wait a minute?
He would have.
Taking...
At one time,
okay.
Yeah, one time he definitely would have. But we've built
right.
That. Mm-hmm.
Right. See, you move through that stage.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're in the teaching stage, you're taking all the time in the world, you're doing slow and right, you're reinforcing, reward the slightest try. Well, pretty soon that's not that horse's slightest try anymore. So then sensitizing means that you're going to ask more, you're going to ask quicker, you're going to ask faster, you're going to ask for less, you're going to ask for precision. See? But that's something you're going to build on. But desensitizing, having a horse desensitized, doesn't change that, because the horse learns to read you. It learns to read that distance.
Okay.
Or that difference. Okay? So again, how we've talked about the human's ability to discern information, the horse develops the ability to discern information coming from you. And just because you're speeding it up doesn't mean they need to lose it emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense? But if you don't desensitize them and the horse is only sensitized, you know, I've been on horses that are so fried that, I mean, you could hiccup and they'd bolt.
Yeah, and I don't
But
like that.
they'd go in and win a blue ribbon. You know, they go in and win a blue ribbon. And sometimes those, it breaks my heart. I get these horses at my clinic and they go, oh, you know, he showed for so many years and he was brilliant and all this stuff, but, you know, I can't hardly lead him from point A to point B. You see, something's wrong with that. Something's out of balance with that. You know, when a horse is in high-level performance, that means the foundation needs to be even broader for that horse in order to keep it in alignment mentally and emotionally. Horses that are at a high level of performance that are not right mentally and emotionally, that just breaks my heart. I see it, you know, you see it all the time. And I walk by and I almost imagine these horses going, help me, like, I'm trying, you know. But we tend to reinforce that. People get the blue ribbons, they get the gold cups, they get, you know, they get the recognition, they get their, you know, they become the trainer. You know, and I've seen performance horses that are so calm, cool, and collected that, man, you just, they're athletic, they're mentally, you know, prepared, they're relaxed, and they pick up, and they perform, and then they drop down, and they go out, and they look like the old cow pony again. So is it possible? Absolutely. Absolutely. But I understand what Mike's saying, because somebody less experienced could go in and just desensitize, and create a horse that won't get out of the way when a car is coming at him. Mm-hmm. That's possible. Okay. So you're going to find that balance. And that's what, again, going back to, that's what horses do with each other. They desensitize to each other, but that doesn't mean that old mare doesn't just flick her ear and things better move. Or something else. But then as soon as it's over, she lets it go and she goes back to just, you know, minding her own business again. Mm-hmm. That's, to me, that's the ultimate. Sorry?
Okay. I was going to say, why do you think there's so much information out there on desensitizing, but I'm not seeing so much on sensitizing?
Everything in my videos is sensitizing.
Okay.
When you put your leg on a horse, when you pick up a rein, when you back them up, when you go forward, that's sensitizing.
Okay.
Sensitize means I want movement from pressure.
Okay.
Okay? And your ultimate movement, a horse should feel like pushing a bubble in a bathtub.
Right.
Responding to just the spot.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, who teaches us to be aware and direct our thoughts and to use our thoughts as part of a sequence that can make sense to the horse, that the horse can make sense of from us. So how many times people go in, they slam and jam, you know? I had a horse that I was asked to help finish for a sale in California, a really nice little mare. When I started, I only had a couple of days with her. I couldn't catch her on the first day, so I spent the time with that, got to where I could catch her. I got her to where she started following feel, where she started, you know, finding her comfort. She started backing up nice. She gave me nice little efforts. She was like, oh, man, you speak my language. This is great. You know, and so she came along pretty nice, you know, and then the last day the gentleman did what he knew because he said, well, we've got to really get her tuned up for the sale, and he bloodied her. He bloodied her. He got on her and put a spur in her belly, and she didn't understand it, and he, you know, he bloodied her. And, you know, so I hear he gives her back to me, and I get on, and she's just trembling. But I'll tell you what, she'd turn on a dime, you know, but she didn't need to. She lost confidence. And all I can do is say a little prayer on the inside. She went to a really nice couple, an older couple, and she was just a nice-natured mare, and, you know, people are going to use him for performance. It doesn't need to be that way, but he didn't know that. I mean, I felt like I took her in a couple of days to a really nice place where she had a good foundation to go on, but, you know, the person that was responsible for those horses was looking for something else. So this is the thing in the horse industry. Everybody has a different opinion, and, again, I'm just, that's what these teleseminars are, is just, it's just my opinion. But I've seen it. I've experienced it. I've done it. A horse can feel like pushing a bubble in a bathtub. Think of that. You're sitting in the bathtub pushing a bubble. The bubble doesn't sit there and go, oh, I'm confused. Oh, I'm, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just a way to move that. But it starts with those foundation DVDs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, here's the thing. Everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only one job you start at the top, and that's postal digging.
That's what
That's post hole digging, and that's the only job you start at the top. And people want to get on and say, you know what, you're a cutting, raining, dressage, jumping cow thing, and you're going to be that today. And it's unfortunate, you know, we live in the day of disposable horses, especially now with the horse industry and the condition that it's in. So it's unfortunate, but there's people out there doing good things. And Leon Harrell is the person that I would suggest you and Mike look into, because it'll just absolutely blow your socks off.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely blow your socks off. He is the best of the best. He really is. He and his son Lance, they're terrific.
Okay. Well, good. Well, I appreciate that, because I'm taking him, you know, slow with him. I've ridden him, I guess, 11 times now, but it's slow stuff. And I'm just trying to, you know, get a good foundation going. And,
mm-hmm.
and want to have that sensitivity there when we need it, and desensitize when we need it, and just trying to get all the right answers. So it's easier to lay it out now and move forward than to have like a latigo problem when you first saw him and he had all this bad junk going. And I don't have that with this colt, so you know,
right?
You started right.
Well, and the hard thing with colts a lot of times is we don't do enough. A lot of times people say, oh, the poor colt. You know what? If you're interacting like how I've presented, like another horse would,
mm-hmm.
he'd go off. If you asked him to go off in a circle, and he should jump out there.
Yeah, and he does.
You know?
Yeah.
Or he should go off at a dog, you know, old cow pony mode,
mm-hmm.
too, depending on your feel. But
mm-hmm.
but he can differentiate that.
I'm seeing a little bit of difference with him is when we're, you know, killing ants and stuff. And some days that's good, and he's okay with that. And you'll throw the, you know, the rope over and stuff, and you get it good. And then you'll come back, and you know, he's like, oh my gosh, you know, it's going to get him again. So, and that's where we've been kind of at a little bit of a disagreement, desensitizing,
mm-hmm.
sensitizing. You know, I want him okay with anything that's going to land on him or come across
mm-hmm.
him in any way, you know. And,
right.
you know, Mike's like, well, you want to keep that sensitive. And I'm like, well, I don't want him jumping out from under me when I'm on him either, you know.
Well, but it's sensitive to your age and your communication.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want him cutting a cow without you.
Right.
You know, you want him to be moving with you. I mean, that's what the rider is for. Otherwise, he'd turn him loose and let him do it without you. You know, it's your focus. It's your, and when you're done, you're done. You know, you pick the cow, the horse holds him, and you decide, you know, at that peak performance when to take him off that cow, get another one or be done or whatever. But there's a way to do it that horse thinks he is bad to the bone. Oh, man. They love it. But there's a way to take him in and drill him and you know, slam them into it, that they start, you'll take something that they love and they're bred to do, and they'll go, man, this is for the bird.
Mm-hmm.
So read Andre Agassi's book. Yeah, that was really surprising to me, but it really reminded me of how we present things to horses. Isn't something, it's everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's everything. The highest paid position in our society should be a kindergarten teacher.
Yeah.
Right?
That's exactly where Elisa's at right now.
Yeah. But you don't do just easy, boring things. You challenge her, too. So
mm-hmm.
kind of keep that in mind. But you won't, if it's done, you know, with that in mind, you will not lose the sensitivity of that horse. What you're saying is you desensitize them to tarps and things like that, and then they can't feel a fly and switch a fly off them. See? They don't lose their sensitivity. But they learn how to discern when they need to move and when they need to relax, and that's from your communication with them. That help you?
Yeah. So very good. Okay. Now I'm looking at the clock, and I apologize, you guys. We've gone over a little bit tonight, but I really appreciate your input there, Karen, and hopefully it'll benefit others as well. So
you bet.
Is there anything else you're wanting to say, Karen, before we close? It's already after 9.
No, I really appreciate it. And if we're going to go long for anybody, Belinda, we go long for you.
Well, I appreciate that. The thing is, we could be on the phone for a couple hours and not stop.
So. Yeah, that's true. That's true. So we'll let this go and pick up again next time. But I'm glad we got to your question.
Yes, thanks. And thanks, everybody, for submitting your questions. And we'll keep those coming. And we look forward to, Karen, I think next month we will have been doing this it'll be our anniversary, I think. Is it 4 years?
It will.
Yeah, 4 years. So time flies, doesn't it?
Is it 4? Mark saying 3, but...
3? Is it 3?
Yeah.
All right, 3.
Time flies when we're having
time
fun.
Time does fly. So, okay, well, listen, good night, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Check out Karen's website, and you'll see the DVDs. The one she was talking about the TV, is also on there, the DVD for that as well. You can get that. So, good night, everybody. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you, Melinda. Have a good night.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye.